Greetings, is the automatically deleted husband, and I have a question I wish I could get answered. I'm going to use the title today. You'll notice it should be in Russian. Kind of like, oh, that's obvious. The translation will be, "We make people free," because I did some research today on Oleg Melnikov, and to try to find out if there was more information, whether or not he's alive or dead, because I went to his website however long ago, week or so ago, and it was gone. The English and Russian was gone. I went back today. The English is still gone. The Russian is back. However, most of the pages are still gone, and statement on there, and obviously the statement I read was translated by machine, so it's, don't think it's that good of English, you know, because my guess is the Russian is better than this. It says organization activities are temporarily resided in connection with the respect of financing, and so I assuming what this is saying is that they have suspended operations because of lack of funding. And so what I have done in further research, the reason is lack of funding is because the bulk of the funding came from Oleg. And if he's not, doesn't have a breath anymore, he's not going to be doing much funding. So that goes to confirm, but there were issues I was wondering about, whether or not, you know, I still don't know why he's not coming across as someone overtly Christian. He may be. His actions seem that way in a lot of respects. Except one thing that would concern me is one article talked about his ex-wife. So I don't know any details beyond that. Because again, the image I had of him was with a child, a young girl, and so I don't know. I don't know the details, but a couple things. And the other thing is, he has done things where he besides the slavery thing. From reading the articles that I found today, there are. The slavery rate in Russia is notable, but not exceptional in the sense that they're not, you know, in the top 10 kind of thing. But several hundred thousand slaves in the country, you know, and of course, U.S. is no different. But there's a lot more description of how people are enslaved. Because again, slavery happens a lot in particular industries, especially when it's that commercial kind of thing. Obviously there's the sex trade. Some of it was, the use of kids and children is horrendous. And there were some articles I read about how begging is an industry, apparently in large cities. And so how true that is in the U.S., I have no doubt. But apparently a lot of the begging is a criminal enterprise. It's not people saying, please help me. It's literally slaves saying, please help me, and they don't get the money. And I find it remarkable. There was an example of a woman who was having eye problems somewhere, and she was given, oh, we'll help you. And what they did is they sewed up her eyes somehow and got her to beg because she looked, you know, really bad. I need help. And they take her money. To use a person like that, I just, and there are the cases, which apparently is common. People go begging with a infant in their arms. And the infant is typically asleep because the infants are drugged. And often they die very young. They're used as a tool. And I just found that, you know, it's one thing to, because what kind of person does it take to say, I am going to go to these people and try to break that system? What kind of courage does that take? And that's what he does. He's in order to obtain some idea of what's going on, where, you know, he's dressed himself up as a beggar in a wheelchair and so forth in order to, and of course, he's paid with being stabbed and being kidnapped and drugged. So he's had some incidences. And the other thing is, you know, there was the question, if he went to Ukraine, why? Is he supporting of the Ukrainian government mentality or the Russian government mentality? And apparently in 2014, 2012, whatever it was, he did go to the Donbass to fight for the Russians, the culturally Russian, the separatists, because they're separatists because they're culturally Russian. And the other thing is, which I've been dwelling on this a lot again today, is he talked about a government list of terrorist suspects or whatever it was. And he checked and he found he wasn't on that list. He called the Ukrainian government and said, why aren't I on that list? I mean, that's nervy. So whether or not, and I pondered doing it, I didn't. Because, you know, it takes a little effort when you have the language problems. But to look at the Ukrainian government kill list if he's on it. Anyway. But what that relates to is, you know, I did put the related video, the video that I found out about him called 21st Century Slaves, which because our overlords at YouTube said, oh, we cannot have the Russian side of the story come out. So they took one of the very popular, you know, they were one of the most popular, you know, far more than like CNN and whatnot, news channels on YouTube. RT, and they took him off. So, you know, it's censorship. You know, land of the free and home of the brave. You suckers. So they've been censored. So it's a little bit harder to find things, and especially again, a lot of the things they've done, their documentaries, are really problematic in the U.S. And of course, the slavery one was not as problematic in the U.S., but it's no longer available. However, it's available at kozlowska.org, and I'm really encouraged that several people, since I've sent my email about this, have made use of that, and because I've received several very encouraging comments, and so it's you know. Oleg was a guy who it takes a little something in your personality, your physical stature and whatnot to do things like he does. I don't have that. I'm the geek. But one of the things that really got to me is that when he went as like an 18-year-old to Dagestan, which is a part of Russia where there's a lot of, apparently, from what I understand, it's brick factories where they is one of the places that makes use of a lot of slave labor. So he went to free some as an 18-year-old, and you know did that now for over a decade, And by the way, the numbers I saw were actually now 1,900. So that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. And the things that really encourage me the most is some of those people go back to family. Anyway. So many things. I don't know if I said it, but in your case I didn't say it, the Russian that I'm putting on my title, it's from his website, and what it translates to is, "We make people free." I just want to make sure that is said. I don't know if I said that. But so two things also came to mind. One was because in my email today, I mentioned Matthew 25. And one of the things I want to remind you of Matthew 25, I wondered when I first read it years ago or reread it, whatever, when you read that story, it's very verbose. You know, when did we see you, stranger? Welcome. Went naked and clothed you. You know, it's this long list kind of thing. And I was wondering, why is it so wordy? And then, of course, if it's so wordy, what are the differences? And is there a purpose now on the differences? And of course, the one that I think is very important is, you know, the first group, the sheep, you know, verse 40, "And the king will answer them, 'Truly I say to you, as you did it to the least, one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me.'" So you say, okay, if I do something to, you know, thirsty and give a drink, for example, to someone who is basically the kind of people that Oleg would minister to, the least of these, you're doing it, the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. So what I see in that, when he says my brothers, he's talking about the elect. So when you do it to the elect, you are doing it unto Christ, including the least. However, verse 45, "Then he will answer them," this is to the goats, "saying, 'Truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me.'" And the notable difference is the "my brothers" is not there. And I really think this is important because it's vital to do it to the elect. You know, it's the idea of love. You know, we're called to love, especially the brotherhood. So the elect. But the problem is, I don't know who they are. Especially someone who is participating in, you know, a lot of sin, or has, you know, either self-destructed or has been destroyed because of circumstances in so many ways, and they look pathetic. I don't know if that person will stand before the Lord redeemed. This, I think, is a major issue. Because some of those may be his brothers. But then there's the other side. When you did not do it, and the fact that the "my brothers" is missing, it's saying, I will contend what it's saying, when you didn't do it to the non-elect. So we are called to bless those, you know, we're called to bless, especially the brotherhood, we're called to encourage and whatnot. But, you know, especially when we have the, you know, bless those that persecute you, or you know, the various ideas of what it is to love. You know, love those who can't love you back. And love those. One of the groups that really, in a sense, can't love you back is the non-elect, because they're not going to have fellowship with the elect for eternity. We're called to love them anyway. And if we didn't, the Lord is saying, you're part of the goats. Not a good idea. Not a good place to be. And I really think that's important. So I'm trying to apply that to myself. Ugh, practice what you preach. Who wants to do that? Oh, no. And the thing that it's been on my mind for years, well, since I think 2015 or so when I wrote the article, are Torah holes intentional? Because in 2015, I think it was, I wrote this article because, you know, as a person involved and studying various things about communication security, in 2012, I came out with the idea of the protocol to do the hypersecure communications. And it had a notable difference from what's called onion routing, which is Tor, the onion router. That's what Tor stands for. And, you know, I came up with my technique and then I found out about Tor. So, you know, but in a sense, for somebody in the field, this is fairly obvious. Somebody with experience, I think, could somebody with an engineering mind could easily come up with this. And what I saw in Tor was what I thought, this is an obvious hole. And so I made a question and wrote the article, was it on purpose? And I will contend it probably was. It either is completely inept, because I've actually heard somebody describe it on a video and said, well, here, you know, this is what you could do, which is basically pointing out the hole that I pointed. But he said, well, that doesn't happen because, you know, you take too many resources and whatnot to do it. Who's got those resources? It's called the intelligence community. Who funded Tor? The intelligence community. You notice the connection there. And the technique to find. And see, the important thing that I think people don't realize, it's not that I have to have everything. It's I use it as a tool to find some. You know, and if I find some, then, you know, and of course, the thing, you know, because obviously some of the things are talked about. Oh, we have end-to-end encryption is one of the big things. This is pointless. Yes, it hides your data, but it doesn't hide the relationships. And it's the relationships. I know that this person is in, you know, is somehow connected to that person, or is doing this, or at this time is connecting to this, whatnot. That's the important data. It's not what you say. It's who you're connected to. And that's the information that's going to be used to do the social credit system in the U.S. and in other places in the world. It's obviously being used in other places. And it's being used here, but this will grow. So it's more than just hiding your data. It's hiding the relationships, because it's the relationships that enslave you. What happened was I wrote the article, you know, published it online, and somebody saw it, read it, and critiqued it within the community, apparently, of those involved with Tor. It was the guy who was the head of Tor. He wrote this article. Someone actually was aware of, you know, I've seen him in some videos. So the head of Tor directly criticized me. He's paid for by the U.S. intelligence community. That's his position. And a third party informed me of this. And at that time, I thought, okay, here is an opportunity to get my head chopped off. Because I'm not going to go into this community and say, I'm going to play along. No, I'm going to point out the issues. And I decided to not push it. And I'm really wondering, especially now that it's, 7 years ago, if I was wrong. if I was wrong, it may be big time wrong. I don't know. Because I look at the example of Oleg. And he put himself in harm's way in order to love others. And I don't know. You know, because, again, how many people, especially in like the US or in Europe or whatnot, care about a guy who's enslaved to make bricks? You don't know about him. I've seen some of these brick factories because there's a some issues anyway that are not quite related, but there have been things going on. But anyway, most people don't know about that stuff. You know, it's not the 6 o'clock news kind of thing. I don't know if there's a 6 o'clock news anymore. But anyway, but. You know, and so Oleg found a particular place. You know, he went to a lot of these people are the brickmakers. He went to a lot of those people. He went into Syria to get some people who were enslaved out. You know, again, the beggars stuff he's done, and of course he went to apparently literally fight for the separatists, as they're called, in the Donbass. So he's done things that put himself at serious risk. And it seems to be that's where his head and his heart were. One of the things that has really become important to me, you know, and I think it goes in reference to Matthew 25, is, as I mentioned yesterday, I think, the idea of being supportive to the whistleblower, even though the whistleblower may have completely opposite stance to I do on various things. Because if I only support those who I agree with, then he will answer them saying, "Truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of these, least of these, you did not do it to me." I think that's very related. So that's why, you know, I try to engage, and I got a response to an organization that's trying to do something based on blockchain. Panquake. Panquake.com. And I looked at that because they have some, and what I'm seeing in there is a lot of people around are pushing this, and they're pushing the idea, the fanciness and whatnot, and talk about the technology and all the some of the gobbledygook. But the gobbledygook, I will contend, which I actually wrote them saying, you may have some good gobbly, but your gook is wrong. I don't know if I'll get a response. You know, obviously in one day I haven't, so no acknowledgement. And you know, most things I don't. But I have to continue, and I wonder how much more I have to put myself at risk. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can in the sense if I have the time. I'm struggling with all the directions. But one of the things that encourages me, you know, it was happened several times. Just picking one, you know. I think it was in the afternoon, maybe, get a phone call, and I answer the phone. And, you know, because we had the our first, you know, first or second generation model of our video display controller cards back in the days of CRTs. And got a phone call. Guy says, "Oh, that's interesting. That work, you know, everything seems to be working right. Send me 5, please." So, you know, great, an order of five, you know, because we were selling one. It's kind of like, oh, an order of five. That was great. And a few months later, I was on the trading floor of the New York Stock Exchange, seeing hundreds of these things drive monitors on the floor. I mean, that phone call came out of nowhere. And then we had resources. Now, mistakes occurred. That's true. I need that again. And, you know, that's not a once-in-a-lifetime thing for me. You know, there's the Ray Kassar events, the chairman of Atari that spent a lot of time with, and the advance from Taito America for the Groot game. There's the, again, phone call on a Friday afternoon. Can I come see you Monday? Who are you? you know, this was this lawyer from Beverly Hills. And I have a phone number in Beverly Hills, just, you know, I use for development. But anyway, and you know, came and this started this all the European travel and whatnot. So these things happen. You know, and some are smaller. Get a phone call. Well, literally got a phone call, said, we have an opportunity here. Would you be interested? Because I was really messing up. And then I got the 6-month contract with Remington Arms, you know. So I was working at Remington headquarters in Madison, North Carolina, for 6 months. And when the 6 months came, in obedience to our federal government, that was the end of it. But obviously, it helped me for 6 months. Anyway, I don't know. But. Okay, the one other big thing is what Oleg had when he went into Dagestan, when he went into Donbass and so forth. He had a couple others with him. He wasn't alone. When my company, Heritage Systems, we did a whole bunch of the things. Yes, all three of those major events, I had someone else with me. I need someone else with me now, because I can't do it all. One, I can't do it all. And two, and there are other issues. The ideal person would be this lady. Not to work with, but to have that encouragement. My wife, Dorothy Jane, I think of you constantly. I love you and I want you back.